Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Nothing's Wrong, A Man's Guide to Managing Emotions, by David Kuntz, narrated by Chris Montero. The young man who has not wept is a savage, and the old man who will not laugh is a fool. George Santayana, 1863-1952, Spanish-American philosopher. When it comes to shaping our decisions and our actions, feeling counts every bit as much, and often more, than thought. Daniel Goleman, American psychologist. Author's foreword. This book is the culmination of a long-term project that means a great deal to me. It began with a single page of notes for a client. Indeed, it has been from my practice of family counseling that I have had opportunities to learn firsthand from clients, men and women, about the topic of men and feelings. Thus, I want to thank the wonderful clients of my practice for trusting me with the stories of their lives. They are a deep blessing to me. We live in a culture that is besieged by violence in many forms, most of it committed by men. My conviction, stated in the simplest and most basic terms, is that much of the violence, from wars and mass shootings to thefts and misdemeanors, is the result of repressed, unexpressed emotions in the lives of the perpetrators. Emotions, one way or another, will come out. If not intentionally and healthily expressed by their owner, then they will come out on their own, most often with negative results. It's the nature of feelings to find some way of getting expressed. In the same way, but with an emphasis on the positive, imagine all the wonders the world is missing because of the unexpressed feelings of men. Discoveries, artistic creations, expressions of kindness, generosities, adventures of the mind and body, service and caring, and on and on. Thus, my goal here is to provide a simple and effective guide for the healthy expression of emotions for men. The focus is clear and specific: how men can become skilled and confident with the feeling part of life. Think of it as the course no one ever offered you, Feelings 101. I have tried to keep the journey short and sweet, the work light, and the payoff huge. Welcome. Introduction. Saving Half Your Life. You are listening to the first words of the first sentence of the book that could save your life. Well, half your life. This book is for men. Too many guys of all ages do not have about half the information we need in order to achieve success in life. The part that we actually get is the thinking half. That's the part that deals with facts, figures, and procedures. For the most part, we men do well when we're dealing with this kind of factual information, really well. The part we don't get is the emotional half. How do all the things that happen to us make us feel? You could say that we lost this half before we ever got it. Something in us, something urgently important, never gets life at all. It remains asleep, as good as dead. There are reasons for this. We'll name a few later on. But whatever the reasons, the smart, successful guys will get this information. And the sooner you get it, the easier your life. Don't get the wrong idea. This is not touchy-feely stuff. Many of us don't much like that. This is about learning a skill and developing a process that most of us never got a chance to practice. I have no power to tell you what to feel, nor any interest in doing so. My purpose is rather to help you identify and express whatever you feel in a healthy way and to be comfortable with the feelings of others. Nothing's Wrong is intended simply to serve as a guide for men to understand how to deal with their feelings. Women are warmly welcomed, but this book is written for males, from teenagers to grandfathers. The basic ideas presented here apply to everyone, but they are specifically designed for guys who never got a map for navigating the highways and byways of the emotional realm. What's wrong? I may not be totally perfect, but parts of me are excellent. Ashley Brilliant, American artist and writer. How many times have we heard the question, "What's wrong?" It generally comes when we are noticeably feeling something. Our response to the question invariably is, "Nothing's wrong," which always seems to be the wrong answer, at least not the answer that was expected or desired. The questioner is often, but not always, a woman. Our answer of nothing's wrong is actually a true answer. In other words, there's nothing wrong with us. That's true. However, time and again we are unable to get to the next part. We get stuck with nothing's wrong. After we say what we know in our gut to be true, there's nothing wrong with us, too often we stand there puzzled and unable to proceed. What comes next is only our unspoken question. Now what? Nothing's wrong with us. We are not deficient in some essential way, faulty from birth, somehow damaged goods, even though we are often perceived that way. Our problem comes not from some essential flaw, but from the failure, our own as well as others, to recognize our particular way of expressing and managing feelings, and from our lack of training and encouragement to do this in a way that is natural for us. The lack of recognition and encouragement of a man's way of dealing with emotions is deeply ingrained in our cultural assumptions, so much so that the unfeeling male is a stereotype, a cultural joke, often accepted by both men and women. The title of this book, Nothing's Wrong, is intended to say that there is nothing at all wrong with the way men express and manage feelings if, and it's a big if, they are given the chance to know and affirm the way that is natural to them, the way nature has equipped them to do it, which, as we will see, is often not the way women express and manage their feelings. Guts. I mentioned that we know the truth of the title in our guts. I believe that guts is a good word for the way men do emotions. While women often feel from the heart, we feel from the gut. For many of us, the source of our feelings seem to be, more than anywhere else, in the pit of our stomachs. It is often the place where we carry our attention and feel the effects of stress. When we give an emotional response to some event or situation, it is often a gut response, something from a source that is deep, visceral, urgent, and primal. I like the word also because it takes courage, or guts, to tackle the subject of this book. It takes a 21st century kind of courage. The frontier we are exploring here is not an uncharted coast or interstellar space. We are exploring a personal and social process of the contemporary male. Though our frontier is very different from our forebears, the territory often feels the same, unknown and foreign. It is certainly no less challenging and adventuresome. 1. Strangers No More. Let's begin with two guys, the man on the moon and the man in the moon. We know who the man on the moon is. He's the astronaut walking on the lunar surface, brought there by logic, nerve, and courage. He's the thinking guy of calculations and logic, predictable and exact. He is the man who is very interested in the external things of the world, like space travel and geology, as well as stocks and bonds, planes and boats, baseball and rugby, cell phones and fast cars. He has steely nerves and determination. He's actually walked on the moon and returned to Earth to tell about it. Everyone admires him. We also know who the man in the moon is. Or do we? He's not so easy to know. He's a trickster. He has a vivid imagination and dreams a lot. He's full of surprises. He has a sly grin on his face, and we're not sure just what he's up to. He's the feeling guy of deep emotions, soulful humor, and wild zaniness, as well as art and beauty, jokes and parties, tears and smiles, rough games and laughter. He is spontaneous and unpredictable. He's the man who is interested in the deep inner life of possibilities and potential miracles. He's full of life and play and understanding. Everyone loves him. Nothing's Wrong is based on the idea that we need to be both these guys, the gutsy, thinking astronaut and the gutsy, fun-loving man in the moon. Because to be one without being the other is to be only half a person, to live only half a life. There are several ways to talk about this half-life. You could say many men have a well-developed thinking part and an underdeveloped feeling part. Or males are more logical and less sensitive. We are more serious, less playful. We are better at being workers than at being friends. Women might say about us, "He never wants to talk very much." Or, "I never know what he's really feeling." or he can be kind, but he doesn't let you in, or I never seem to get to know him. Many of us males are playing the game of life with half the team missing, and we often wonder what's going on, why things don't work out better for us. Men, Moon, and Mountain. Here are a couple of stories about these two guys, Astronaut Thinking Guy and Man in the Moon Feeling Guy. The first one happened in 1972, on the moon. Did you ever see the video of Apollo 16 astronaut John Young as he jumped up and down and waved his arms wildly during his walk on the moon? His behavior had nothing to do with the scientific purpose of the expedition. He was just having fun. He looked like an excited kid on a trampoline. The guys at Mission Control in Houston were probably not impressed. What the hell is Young doing? He's not supposed to do that. His kids watching on TV probably got a hoot out of it. Wow, look at Dad. In those few seconds, Young became a great example of both parts of male life. Thinking, technical, logical, and feeling, artistic, spontaneous. He was, in that happy moment, the man on the moon and the man in the moon. Here's another story. It also takes place up in the air, on the top of Mount Everest, the highest mountain in the world, located in the rugged and remote northern highlands of Tibet. In 1953, Edmund Hillary, an explorer from New Zealand who was leading a British expedition, successfully scaled Mount Everest. He was the first human being to achieve this incredible feat. When Hillary completed his historic act of reaching the summit, exhausted but happy, the first thing he did was thrust the British flag deep into the snow to proclaim that he had conquered the mountain. But he wasn't the only one there. His companion and guide, Tenzing Norgay, had also made the historic climb. Norgay was a Sherpa, one of the legendary mountain guides from northern Tibet. He was raised in a simple rural family with a very different background from Edmund Hillary. As you might expect, Tenzing Norgay expressed himself in a different way. Upon arriving at the summit of the great mountain, he knelt down in the snow and prayed to the gods of the mountain, asking their forgiveness for disturbing their peace. One man proclaimed his conquering achievement, the other prayed to the gods for pardon. The point I want to make is this. We need both, because we are both. One is not right while the other is wrong. One is not weird and the other normal. No, they are both healthy expressions of the male life. In this instance, you could say that Hillary expressed the thinking part and Norgay expressed the feeling part, but we know from their lives and writings that Norgay understood and applauded Hillary's flag thrust, while Hillary respected and affirmed Norgay's prayer. The one needs the other. Even more, in order to live a complete life, each needs to become the other. I want to make clear from the beginning that I do not label one as good and the other as bad. That is the last thing I want to do. Both of these male aspects are good, and we must welcome both of them into our lives. Miseducation. One's happiness depends less on what he knows than on what he feels. Liberty Hyde Bailey, 1858 to 1954, botanist and horticulturist. As males, our biggest problem is that, on the subject of emotions, our culture is deeply biased. There are reasons why most boys and men, probably including you, have been emotionally miseducated, a term I've borrowed from Michael Thompson and Dan Kinlan's book Raising Cain. What they mean is that the combined forces of society steer a young male away from his inner world. This has an effect, they say, even on the youngest boy who learns quickly that he must hide his feelings and silence his fears. We carry that attitude, alive and well, into our adult lives. I believe this is true for all men, young and old, highly educated and less educated, raised in well-to-do families or in poor families, extroverts and introverts, straight and gay, urban businessmen and country ranchers, steel workers and family therapists, managers and employees, basketball players and poets. All of us. While society tolerates some of what it sees as male emotions, like anger and aggression, It is generally uncomfortable with the free expression of all feelings by boys and men, and strongly resists teaching and promoting them. So our culture tries actively to steer you in the wrong direction. That's something to take note of. As a result, of course, most men are good at thinking and not good at feeling. But that's not all. There is also a physical basis for the way we are with our feelings. It's the way our brains are wired. I'll refer to a few of these characteristics later. Putting words on feelings. Given the culture in which we've been raised, it's no wonder that many of us are challenged by the feeling part of life. We often can't seem to recognize and talk about the feelings we are having at any given moment. What we do instead is run away or cover up. As soon as we feel something, or someone else in our presence is feeling something, especially if it's a strong feeling like fear or attraction, we run from it before it has a chance to let us know it's there, much less get expressed. Running means changing the subject, distracting yourself with some other activity, or moving on to something new. Or we cover it with TV, music, sports, humor, sex, laughter, anything that covers over and hides the feelings that are there. So when someone asks us what we're feeling, we can often truthfully say, "Oh, nothing." We're not lying, because we run so quickly from the feeling or cover it so well that we literally don't know it is there. Here are stories that two men, Jim and Derek, tell about themselves when they were boys. I want to start there because that's when it starts. Jim's story. Jim is 42, a civil engineer, husband, and father of two. When I was a junior in high school, I was fairly popular. In fact, everyone was expecting me to be elected homecoming king. But when the votes were in, I lost. I was fourth out of five. Everyone was surprised, including me. But what I said was, "Oh, it's okay. I didn't really expect to get it. It's no problem. It's nothing." These were my typical responses to my parents, teachers, and friends. But what I was really feeling was painful embarrassment and shame. In fact, I can still feel it now as I talk about it, after all these years. Now, of course, I know what I was feeling, but for too long, I just didn't allow most of my feelings to come out. Any normal human being would have those feelings. But Jim ran from them, changed the topic, got involved in something else, denied any negative feelings, probably put on his headphones and blasted the music. "This was exactly the occasion," he adds, "when I started a pattern of non-feeling." There's a name for the condition I'm talking about, alexithymia. It's from Greek words, meaning no words for feelings. A few of us guys have it really bad. Most of us have at least a light case of it. The bad news is that it does a lot of damage to us. The good news is that, in the vast majority of cases, it's fixable. Alexithymia. Difficulty in describing or recognizing one's emotions. The word is used to describe persons who define emotions only in terms of bodily sensations or behavioral reaction. Psychiatric Dictionary. A mood in which one has a constricted emotional life, diminished ability to fantasize, and a virtual inability to articulate emotions. Essential Psychopathology. People with alexithymia lack words for their feelings. Indeed, they seem to lack feelings altogether, although this may actually be because of their inability to express emotion rather than an absence of emotion. Daniel Goleman, Emotional Intelligence. Derek's story. I won't tell you. For most of us, these patterns began when we were boys. The story of Derek, now 44, begins during the end of his senior year in high school. This was a kid who had been in trouble forever. He was a middle child in a large and gregarious family. At this late date in the school year, it was doubtful if he would make the grades to graduate. Then he got caught by the vice principal smoking pot in the school parking lot. That was the point at which Derek literally shut up. He wouldn't talk to anyone. Family, friends, school counselor, pastor, teachers, or police, no one. He'd just look at the ground and shake his head. His story slowly moves forward with very little life. He had to do community service for using a controlled substance. he did not graduate from high school. He got an unchallenging job and just sort of existed. Only now, in midlife, is he coming to his full emotional life. By titling Derek's story, "I Won't Tell You," I make an assumption that he could have told us if he wanted. While I think that's true, I don't really know. That's the frustrating thing about Derek and so many like him. We just don't know what's going on in their inner life. They won't or can't tell us. He had no words for his feelings, which remained locked up deep inside him. Steve's story. "I Can't Tell You." Here's a story of a man who is very good at the thinking side. He is a member of Mensa, only very high IQs invited. His name is Steve. He and his wife Amy are in their late 30s, with 2 young kids, their own home, and successful working lives. They have come to see me, a family therapist, because their marriage is troubled. During our 5th or 6th session, without warning, Amy says she believes their marriage cannot survive and she wants a divorce. Bam! Just like that. To this sobering announcement, Steve reacts with a sad, vacant stare into space. It lasts a long 15 seconds. No one says a word. I am as surprised as he is. Then, without saying anything, he calmly stands up, picks up his coat and briefcase, and walks out of my office. Jump ahead 2 weeks. After several attempts, I convince Steve to come in on his own to talk about it. When he comes to my office, I can feel him bristle. He doesn't want to be here. We start talking, or rather I start talking. From him, I get nothing but grunts, noises, or shakes of the head. Clearly, he is in pain. A couple times he glances at me, silently begging me to end the torture and let him go. He just can't say much of anything. After one particularly long period of silence, I notice I am really getting annoyed and think to myself, this must be what his wife feels. Then I ask, "Well, Steve, what about just telling me briefly what you are feeling right now, knowing that your wife intends to divorce you?" His response begins slowly, then quickly builds force as his eyes snap wide to attention, rise up, and rivet me. His face becomes flushed, his body rigid, his fists clenched, and his look enraged. Then he bolts from his seat, storms across the room, turns back toward me, now fevered and furious, raises his arms high, to attack, to entreat, and literally screams, "You sound just like my wife, don't you see?" And then, even louder and more anguished, "I don't know what I'm feeling." When my heart returns to its normal beat, and I take a deep breath or two, he is now slumped in his chair, spent and embarrassed. I say in a quiet voice, "Oh." After a moment, I say it again, "Oh." I could only hope the simple word expressed what I wanted him to know, that I heard him, not just his words, I'm sure half the building heard those, but him. More importantly, I wanted him to know that I actually believed him. He did not know what he was feeling about his marriage, his possible divorce, and even about his wife. Steve simply did not know his emotional state, and thus could not put it into words. He knew he was in pain, but beyond that, he simply didn't know. It wasn't that he didn't want to know. In fact, he did want to know. It wasn't that he really knew but just wouldn't tell me. No, he really didn't know. He truly had no words for his feelings. Steve was a man in his late 30s when this happened. He was so used to not knowing his feelings that he didn't know that he didn't know. It's not too late. In this situation, not being able to put into words the emotions you are experiencing, many men find we are misjudged as stuck up or stubborn or even stupid. Sometimes we even judge ourselves with those words. But in the vast majority of situations, this is not true. Almost always, what we are going through are the effects of our lack of training in the ways of dealing with feelings. Many times, when the feelings finally do come out, they come out in an explosion, like Steve's did. And often, they get us into trouble. At best, we're accused of overreacting, At worst, we're seen as fearsome or violent. It's a no-win situation. There's a point I want to make with the stories of Jim, Derek, and Steve. If you begin now to find ways to attach words or some other healthy means of expression to your feelings, you can avoid the sad situations that the three of them got into. This is indeed what you are doing by listening to this book. It's never too late. Today, Steve continues his slow but sure journey to emotional fitness. Although he and his wife separated for a few months, they both did 4 months of counseling, and he joined a weekly men's group. They got together again and are now giving the marriage a second chance. In fact, it is from our work together several years ago that this book began to take shape. And Derek? It's an ongoing story. When we last met, the signs were good. The reasons for these changes is that he had met someone and was very interested in her. But she did not want a half-living partner. I'm betting he's been successful. He was really tired of living half a life. Emotional literacy. In our culture, feelings are not talked about very much. Unfortunately, you can't take a course in feelings at any school. All human beings, male and female, have feelings and have the capacity for the full range of emotional expression. But sometimes boys and men act and are treated as if we just don't have any feelings. Another way to talk about this is with the term emotional literacy, which is about being comfortable with the language of feelings. We all have a history, the stories of our successes and failures, of dealing with our feelings, and it is helpful to know what your history is. Your relationship to feelings. Here are a few questions, broadly based on Claude Steiner's When a Man Loves a Woman, to help you find out about your relationship with feelings. As you listen, keep track of your yeses and nos. 1. Do your feelings sometimes puzzle you? Are you sometimes unable to understand them or know what to do about them? 2. Do your feelings sometimes get out of control, like a feeling of anger or feeling sad and depressed? 3. Do you sometimes feel very alone and left out, with the sense that you are missing out on something important? 4. Do people complain that you are a loner, different from everyone else, that you are cold, stuck up, mean? 5. Do you have trouble getting to know friends more than just casually? 6. Do you experience your feelings of liking others as coming and going and changing quickly? 7. Are you embarrassed to ask for what you want or to talk about being hurt? 8. Do you have trouble crying, or do you cry a lot? 9. Do you avoid emotional situations like goodbyes or people who are grieving or sick? 10. Are you embarrassed when someone shows affection for you in public? 11. Do you sometimes avoid feelings by expecting the females in your life, family member, wife, friend, to live your emotional life for you? If you answered yes to some or all of these questions, or if your no's were weak or doubtful, then you're just like most of us guys. Like the rest of us, you have a degree of emotional illiteracy. You are sometimes at a loss when it comes to knowing what to do about feelings. Now what do I do? Is often as far as we get. The inner life. When I do good, I feel good. When I do bad, I feel bad. And that's my religion. Abraham Lincoln. For many, the inner life might not be a very hot topic. The sound of it might even make you nervous. This is where guts comes into the process. Right now is when I need you to hang in there. Why? Because lifelong misery begins right here. The very words inner life can make us nervous. It is precisely here, your inner life, where most guys get into trouble and stay there for their whole lives. Bear with me for a few paragraphs, and I think you'll see it. First, what do I mean by the inner life? There are a lot of ways to answer that. You actually know what it is, of course, but it is difficult to describe. So that we're on the same page, here is a free-flowing description of some of the things that make up the inner life. The inner life is the life you live when you are alone and just thinking. Everything that you fantasize and imagine is part of it. It is what you feel when you see someone you like.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?